Back When is sponsored by Siwi, the National Trust's photo printing partner. Every image captures a story. Siwi's support means the National Trust can protect our nation's memories by caring for and sharing our vast collection of historic photographs. Through our work together, we're uncovering precious and previously unseen images for everyone to enjoy. Discover our work snapshotting 200 years of history. Search online for Siwi, that's C-E-W-E, and the National Trust.
It does seem obvious that there would be a solution in wealthy American women marrying British aristocratic men who were in need of a cash influx. This is a theme that we see popping up in popular culture quite frequently. Shows like Downton Abbey, where the main female character, Cora Crawley, marries Lord Grantham. She is a dollar princess. And I suppose we know what's in it for the men, but it's interesting to think about what was in it for the women who, in some instances, felt themselves like they were being sold off.
In the late 1800s and early 1900s, there were about 450 of these marriages. And one of these marriages would go on to create one of Britain's greatest ever statesmen. Winston Churchill, half American. I'm heading to Rosetta Cottage on the Isle of Wight to the scene of his parents' proposal to find out more about the Dollar Duchess phenomenon. Have you ever imagined being a fly on the wall of history? Join me for an inside view of the stories of people, places, and moments that made us. I'm historian James Grasby. Lean in for a tale from time. Back When. A blue sea is lapping lazily onto this shingle beach. I'm looking out over the Solent towards Portsmouth and Southampton. To my right, a long way along Queen's Drive, is the Royal Yacht Squadron. But turning my back from the sea, across this shingle beach is a very pretty cottage. I'm going to go over and have a look at this. Now, I hope I'm going to find local historians Steve Burden and Joe Thornton, who are going to unravel this yarn. The year is 1873, it's Cowes Week, and the great and the good have gathered to enjoy one of the greatest sailing regattas in the world. This cottage, right on the seafront, has the most fantastic views onto the water. It's a holiday cottage now, and back in 1873, it was available to rent for Cowes Week. And it has some very special guests this year, the Jerome family from America.
They were quite a well-off family. Leonard Jerome, he was a big financial stock market dealer. But unfortunately, due to the Wall Street crash, he had to stay in America. But his wife rented Rosetta Cottage to stay there with their daughters so that they could attend the regatta and the Cowes Week.
The Jerome family consists of three daughters, Jenny, Clarita and Leonie. Jenny's the eldest and considered quite the catch.
Jenny Jerome was a fascinating woman. She came from a very wealthy family. She had an incredibly chic upbringing between New York and Paris.
Louisa Brower is a cultural heritage curator who's written about dollar duchesses.
She was whip smart. She was a voracious reader and she was really attractive to men. She had a lot of men who were quite interested in her, not just for her money, but for her smarts and for her beguiling nature.
And so it may have been inevitable that she might meet someone during a Cowes Week filled with glamorous balls and parties.
So the Yacht Squadron always had balls. The atmosphere was probably always very busy with parties and people dressed up in, you know, their best to do clothing.
You could be with the royalty, you could dance with the royalty, you could meet them. And that's what happened in 1873.
The Jerome family receive an invitation to the royal yacht, the HMS Ariadne, to meet the Prince and Princess of Wales.
And as it happened, Lord Randolph Churchill also had an invite to the same boat, to the same ball.
Randolph Churchill is the younger son of the Duke of Marlborough, one of the most noble aristocrats of the time, an aspiring MP whose home is the immense Blenheim Palace in Oxfordshire.
He was quite a catch, but I don't think the Jeromes necessarily thought he was as much of a catch as they wanted for their daughter.
So set the scene. There's a ball on the royal yacht. What happens next?
So Jenny was apparently dancing the waltz along with her sisters, and Randolph at that time walked in and instantly spotted her. It was love at first sight. He was with his friend, Lord Edgecombe, and he said to Lord Edgecombe, "Who is this wonderful, beautiful woman? You know, can you please introduce me to her?" He was introduced to her and they danced a quadrille together. Jenny must have spoken to her mother, and she got him an invite back to Rosetta Cottage that evening to dine so that they could meet in a more social, private atmosphere than on the yacht.
There seems to be a genuine affection between Jenny and Randolph, but that isn't the case for all dollar duchess marriages. Many could be referred to as marriages of convenience, a marriage of wealth and title.
The dollar duchess phenomenon, or dollar princess as it's also referred to, was happening at quite a rapid pace at this point in the late 19th to the early 20th century. Some reports said that there were upward of 450 of these marriages between wealthy American women and European aristocrats across Europe. But it was a particular phenomenon between American women and British aristocrats. The term dollar princess refers to these daughters of super wealthy American elites. So these are young women whose parents are willing to pay top dollar dowries so that they could marry into the British aristocracy. This is mostly new money, nouveau riche individuals who emerge at this sort of critical point just as Britain's aristocratic class is beginning to crumble. You might have heard of the term robber baron before. This refers to Americans who had made an immense amount of wealth from industrial success in things like mining, railroads, oil extraction. It was a loaded sort of negative term that referred to the sort of unfair business practices that often went on at this time. But it is names that you would be familiar with. It's family names like the Vanderbilts, the Rockefellers, the Carnegies, etc. Was really sort of a turning point in Britain. It was when the British elite found that their fortunes were beginning to erode, and erode quite rapidly. For many, many centuries, riches in England had been held up in lands and in agriculture. But several things happened. Certainly social structures were changing. This was pre-war, but England's food production was beginning to be outsourced to places like the United States. At the same time, rural populations were flocking to cities, and the aristocracy found that they had these vast landholdings, sometimes thousands and thousands of acres, but they weren't worth what they were before. And in addition to this, these vast estates, and especially these big country houses, were hugely costly to maintain. Most of these people did not work. They didn't have a traditional job. They relied on this inherited wealth, which at this point in time was really becoming quite unstable.
It's a phenomenon that works for British and American fortunes and futures, but it also makes for a very good storyline in film and TV.
This is a very prevalent theme that runs throughout many books, many films, many movies, and was really quite a social catalyst at the time. Shows like Downton Abbey, where the main female character, Cora Crawley, marries Lord Grantham. She is a dollar princess. She was actually based on a real figure, so she was based on Lady Elmina, who lived at the house where Downton Abbey was filmed. She married the 5th Earl of Carnarvon. But thinking a bit more broadly, shows which are currently on, like The Gilded Age, and even the film Titanic, that film is set in this sort of social milieu. And even Princess Diana is descended from a dollar princess. So this is a phenomenon that has a huge impact on the social structures that we know of today. It was quite pervasive at the time, but has had a really lingering effect on British art, culture, heritage, etc. It does seem obvious that there would be a solution in wealthy American women marrying British aristocratic men who were in need of a cash influx. And I suppose we know what's in it for the men, but it's interesting to think about what was in it for the women, who in some instances felt themselves like they were being sold off as these dollar princesses. And really for them, it was status. So these were women who were perhaps not grounded in the wealth of old America. There was a lot of snobbery going on at the time about these sort of nouveau riche individuals who had made their money quite recently and didn't have ties to the founding fathers who had come over on the Mayflower, etc. And so instead of trying to sort of prove themselves in within the moneyed rich of America, they became noble women and inherited a legacy in Britain that they would then be able to pass on to their children. For some of them, it was a love match, certainly, but for many, it was a marriage of convenience, is how we would describe it today.
On the Isle of Wight in 1873, it doesn't just make sense. Things are moving quickly. Jenny and Randolph are now infatuated with one another. We're on the sunny side of Rosetta Cottage, on this lovely pristine lawn with a view of the sea. There are French doors opening into what looks like a very gracious dining room. Joe, will you lead the way and take us inside? Now, going through here in what is a very nice and handsome dining room. But I want to see more of this house. I'm going to open this four-panel door opposite this, a very pretty drawing room with sea views to die for. Joe and Steve, they've fallen in love. There's a sparkle and a beating heart that has started. Steve, it's a captivating place. They were sort of intoxicated with each other.
You know, it's only day two. They then take dinner in Rosetta House and it carries on flourishing from there.
We can assume that they probably sat maybe in this very drawing room or one of the chairs here looking out to sea and talked about the Cowes Week that they'd been taking part in.
I have to say, it is the most romantic setting here, isn't it? With, again, French doors, a neatly clipped evergreen hedge, and there is the Solent sparkling in the summer sunshine.
Jenny persuades her mother to once again let Randolph dine the next night, again at Rosetta Cottage, because he was leaving the next day. And after dinner, they went and they took a turn into the garden, and if we go out into the garden, we can discover what happened next.
Let's do that. So we're leaving behind that unbelievable view of the sea. I want to come and stay here. The garden is ahead.
The sun is shining right through the French doors and open out the doors into the garden. There's a beautiful sea breeze. It's a beautiful setting. So after dinner on that third night, Randolph took Jenny out into the garden on their own. He took her into a nice little private corner. And he knelt down on one knee and he proposes to her.
So a proposal here, in this garden, after only 3 days. But the deal isn't quite sealed just yet. There is one more hurdle to overcome. Randolph's parents. John Winston Spencer Churchill, 7th Duke of Marlborough, and Lady Frances Anne Emily Vane, the daughter of a marquis.
When Churchill presented Jenny to his parents, they were horrified. They were horrified that he would want to marry an American socialite instead of a British noblewoman. Again, that kind of class snobbery went on both sides of the Atlantic. But when they realized that her dowry was enormous, it was something like over $4 million in today's money just coming to the family on the advent of the marriage. They did approve of the marriage, begrudgingly approved of the marriage.
And so they marry, although they wait for Randolph to become an MP, which appeases Jenny's family somewhat. And then, not quite 9 months later, in 1874, a baby boy is born, Winston Churchill.
I think it was something like 7 months after the wedding, so you can sort of do the math. And there was certainly social scandal around that fact. It did dog him for his life, but he obviously rose above it.
It's hard to imagine, isn't it? That little toddler goes on to join a cavalry regiment, 21st Lancers or something, fought in Sudan, fought in the Boer War, entered politics, entered government, formed a government after the resignation of Chamberlain and led Great Britain through the Second World War to victory.
I think people sometimes don't appreciate that Churchill was half American, and this was certainly a fact that probably helped with his success in negotiating during World War II. Of course, he led England through the war, and some have said that his half-American status probably helped garner support from both sides of the Atlantic. So it's very critical for British history.
a national figure, an international figure. And it all started here, through a chance encounter at a party on a yacht. Thanks for listening to this episode of Back When. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, if a trip to the Isle of Wight is on the cards, why not check out Rosetta Cottage? There's a plaque on the pavement outside. Or you can have a nose at the interiors on our holidays page, or even book a stay. I'll leave a link in the show notes. I'll be back soon. See you next time.
This podcast is sponsored by Siwi, Europe's leading photo printing company. Every image you capture tells a story. Discover ideas for curating and creating your special memories and unique gifts for loved ones. From high-quality, personalised photo books to wall art made from your favourite photos. Head to Siwi, that's cewe.co.uk, and start creating your story.